Welcome to Simple Life Radio, stories for the adventurous at heart. I'm your host today, Cynthia Fernandez, and to just be with you and talk about real life experiences and perspectives from the folks on the Central Coast of California. Today, our guest is not a local. He's actually from the East Coast, but he has written a book about a subject that affects everybody, no matter where they are, and that subject is human trafficking. Stuart Perrin has authored several other books, and the latest is titled Little Sisters. It's a novel, but it's about human trafficking in India and has been based on information collected by an undercover cooperative there. And I'm going to have him help us understand how that all came about. He will be at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden immediately following this interview. So that'll begin about 5:30 later today, and he'll be there until 7. He'll be available if you want to come by and meet him, signing books and having conversations with folks. Welcome, Stuart. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Cynthia.
Now, in your book titled Little Sisters, in the acknowledgments, you recognize Christina Jones for spending time in the front lines combating the human trafficking there. Maybe you could start us off with what the circumstances were that motivated you to write this book.
The circumstances were very simple. In 1992, Christina and I co-founded a safe house in Kathmandu. Up until that point, neither of us had any knowledge whatsoever about, you know, human trafficking. My whole life work was setting up meditation centers around the world. Two students of mine asked me if I would be willing to set up a center in Kathmandu. And I told them, yeah, it sounds like a great idea to me. We've taken so much out of the Asia that maybe we can really give something back. So we set up a center in Kathmandu.
And now, this is a meditation center?
A meditation center. Mm-hmm. And Christina was the head teacher in the center. And I asked her, Chris, do you want to go live in Kathmandu? And she said, great, I'll go. So she moved to Kathmandu. And about 2 weeks after getting there, she called me in New York. I was in New York. And she said, Stuart, you know, I really love this place. It's the most exotic place I've ever lived, but I don't know what to do with my time. So I said to her, Chris, you're in one of the poorest countries in the world. I guarantee you something is going to come. 2 days later, I get a phone call from her. She went to a meeting with the United Nations Women's Organization, and the meeting was about human trafficking. And they had told her, she found out at this meeting, that to that point, there were over 200,000 children that had been trafficked from Nepal into India that were living in places like, I don't know if you know what Falkland Road is in Bombay, but it's, you know, incredible. It's almost surrealistic, you know, of 10, 12, 14-year-old children that are painted like peacocks, and they're standing there in cages and doorways. And just a little side thing, I'd been in India many times, and I'd been through Falkland Road. And to me, up until that point, it was like an oddity, something, you know, go to India, you see very interesting stuff. And I thought, all right, this is an oddity, part of their the strangeness of their culture. Never occurred to me, how did these children get there? And when she called me up and told me about this, I said, Chris, we have to set up a safe house in Kathmandu. We have to work with doctors, with NGOs, and go to families in the hinterland and try to keep their children from being sold to traffickers that were bringing them to these brothels in India. We set up the safe house, and we worked with a woman named Dr. Aruna Upreti, who ran an organization called REST. And we eventually had at least 20 children living in our safe house that would have wound up on Falkland Road in Bombay. And we ran this safe house for about 2 years. And then Chris, you know, Kathmandu is kind of a, you know, really, it's kind of a polluted place. It used to be paradise, and it became really very polluted. And she was starting to get kind of lung disease, emphysema, you know, kind of slight asthma. And I said, Chris, you better come back to the States, and take care of this. So we talked to Aruna, about incorporating our foundation, the Bahini Foundation, under the auspices of REST. And Aruna was very happy to do this. And the organization we started, the Safe House, and working with children this way, was the first organization of its kind ever created in Nepal. And we ran it for 2 years, and we actually ran the Bahini Foundation for 4 years, where we kept raising money and helping Aruna.
So somewhere along the line, you decided to get the word out and write this book.
Well, what happened was, in all my time I spent with children there in Nepal, I heard we had children and women living in our safe house that were kicked out of brothels in Bombay. They had AIDS. They had all kinds of problems like that. And I used to listen to the stories. It was so horrifying. The things I heard that were done to children. I'm talking 8 years old, 10 years old, 12-year-old children. They were raped. They were tortured. They were brainwashed. They were drugged. They were transformed into machines that would sleep with 20 men a day. And it just affected me so deeply inside. And then I used to come to the United States, and I would try to get people interested and to donate money and to help. And people would look at me like they were deaf and dumb. We don't believe that this is going on in the
world.
I'm telling you, this is what I got. We don't believe this. This can't be going on. Why should we care about children in Nepal? We have enough problems here in the United States. I heard this repeatedly from people.
So did it impress you that maybe they just didn't understand? Or because we actually, frankly, don't hear about this all that much.
Well, we don't. And they didn't understand. And honestly, Cynthia, it outraged me. I got so angry. I sat down and I wrote the story of Little Sisters. It came out of me like a force of nature. In 3 weeks, I wrote the story.
Gosh.
You know, it took 4 years to edit the novel, but the story came in 3 weeks. I never changed it in all the editing of the novel. And I was so outraged. I said, and originally, honestly, I wrote it as a screenplay.
Oh, really?
Because I thought that, the whole world should know about this.
Yeah, you're right.
And I said, if a movie is made,
then people will.
It will affect people everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
I had an agent in Hollywood who tried to present this to studios, and we just got.
Nothing.
Nothing. Nobody was interested.
And so I wanted to ask you, you wrote this, you said it poured out of you like a faucet in 3 weeks.
Oh boy, like a force of nature.
And you wrote it with information that had been collected. And was that information collected by Christina Jones then?
It was collected by myself.
Okay.
I spoke to these children, I spoke to these women, I heard the stories. And then Chris herself went to Falkland Road in Mumbai, and she went into the brothels.
Now, wasn't she the healthcare person that kind of went into the brothel and interfaced almost undercover?
Undercover,
okay.
Yes. If they would have found out what she was doing there, they might have killed her.
Right.
And honestly, the reason I wrote this as fiction, because if I would have tried to do a documentary movie of the sort that what I talk about in my book, I would have never walked out of there alive. There was no way.
There's a lot of money wrapped around human trafficking.
A lot of money beyond all that you can imagine.
Tell us, what's the number?
Today, the number is that it's an international business worth $32 billion. And there are 27 million women and children from the age of 6 up that are being trafficked into sexual slavery. 27 million.
That is mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling.
Now, how is it that we don't hear about that? I mean, that's way more than any war.
That's right.
You could put all the wars together.
And slavery today is worse than before the Civil War in the United States.
Do you have any insight as to what is the obstacle to getting this into the mainstream awareness?
Mostly people don't want to listen.
It's sobering. It's not a happy thought.
It's not a happy thought. It's not something people want to deal with. It is so big that people just say, what can I do?
Yeah.
What can I do? Well, I have an answer what people can do.
Well, I hope so.
I really do. First answer is there are many, many organizations in the United States that deal directly with child slavery and human trafficking. You can find them on the internet. Just put anti-human trafficking in Google, and these organizations will come up. People can help to support these organizations that are doing hands-on work in the field. That's the first thing they can do, and that's the easiest thing to do, is just to write a check, whether it's $5 or, you know, $100,000.
And so how does somebody find one of these organizations? There's many of them, you said.
Oh, yeah.
How do you find them?
Just go to Google.
And you Google human trafficking?
Human trafficking or anti-human trafficking.
Oh, that's even better.
Look, I have an organization called the Little Sisters Foundation that came out of my book. You know, and we've just been recognized by the state of Oregon, and we filed for the 501c3. And this organization needs financial support. If people want to help out, they can, you know, help out that way. The second and more important thing is that the same thing that happened to me can happen to other people.
What's that?
When you begin to see that this is the greatest crime being committed in the world today, this is tantamount to murder, what's going on in the world today. People's souls are being extracted, and they're transformed into machines that sleep, as I said before, with 20 men a day. I felt such outrage in myself. I said, what? And it just, I didn't know that I was going to write a book.
Right.
I didn't know I was going to start a foundation. I didn't know that I was going to start a safe house.
You were touched by it.
I was so moved deeply in myself that I found creative ways of doing something to help human beings. And, you know, the incredible thing is that Aruna, Dr. Upreti, called Christina and myself about a year ago. And she told us that because we started that safe house and that foundation in Nepal, it saved the lives of 10,000 children.
And what period of time is that? Is that an annual number?
No, that's not an annual number. That's since 1992.
Okay.
But you have to realize that in Nepal, and also in, like, you know, in Nepal, there are over 200,000, there are over 10,000 children that are being trafficked every year from Nepal to India.
Just from Nepal?
Just from Nepal. In the United States, there are over 200,000 children and women living in sexual slavery today.
200,000?
200,000.
And is it limited to gender?
No. No, there are boys, little boys. There are, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that is a sobering topic, and the numbers are just astronomical. As I mentioned before, I'm really struck that there's so many more people affected than a war.
Than a war.
And yet, we don't hear about this.
Well, you hear about it. In 92, you didn't hear about it.
Okay.
If they wrote an article in the paper, it was like,
minuscule.
3 inches, minuscule, somewhere on the 40th page.
Right.
Today, you know, CNN does, you know, they do videos about this. They do documentaries about it. A couple of years ago, there was a woman from Nepal who runs a safe house there who became the CNN Hero of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
All of this, you know, it's more in the media than it's ever been.
So it's growing in terms of exposure.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it should, because it's something that is, I mean, I've done events, panel events with people from the FBI. I've done panel events with people from police, detectives that work in this field. One of them in Portland, a very nice man, and I said to him, Mike, how many pimps are there in Portland? He said, there are at least 1,000 pimps.
In Portland?
Portland, Oregon.
I thought Portland was sleepy.
Well, yeah. I mean, they say the I-5 corridor is one of the biggest areas of trafficking in the United States.
Oh, my gosh.
So I said to him, how many of these guys do you bust every month? He said, maybe one.
Oh, no.
So I said, what's the problem? He said, we have no money. They don't finance this. We don't have enough money to really run. I have two people working with me.
Oh, man.
And that, you know. So this is the problem.
Right, right. Well, we're speaking with Stuart Perrin, and he is the author of the book Little Sisters. He has written several other books. If you'd like more information about him, you can find it on his website, stuartperrin.com. He will be at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden just after this interview, beginning at 5:30 today. He'll be signing books and meeting people. So if you missed any part of this show today, or you'd like to share it with a friend, the archive will be available as a podcast and through the Pilgrim's Way website, that's pilgrimsway.com, by clicking on Simple Life Radio. For more information on Perrin, as I said, Dr. Perrin, you can go to his website, stuartperrin.com. That's S-T-U-A-R-T, Perrin.com. We're going to be back right after this break. Stay with us to find out what is the profiling for human trafficking. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're back with Simple Life Radio. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez. And we're here in the studio with author Stuart Perrin. He is not a local author. He's actually from the East Coast in New York. But he wrote a book titled Little Sisters about human trafficking. And there's a lot to this topic. I don't know how familiar you are with the topic. I know that it's not a feel-good topic, but certainly a worthy conversation and a lot to understand that affects anyone, anywhere, globally. So, Stuart, before we went to the break, we were talking about how prevalent this issue is. Remind us again of the numbers. Is it 27
million
people
being trafficked around the world today?
Globally. Right. And so is there a particular profile that these individuals look for to abduct, gender or an age group or a location, maybe?
To my understanding, it generally starts around 12 years old. Girls, one of the big areas of trafficking today are shopping malls, where pimps and traffickers send other girls into the malls, and they approach, you know, children that are there and say, look at me, I've got jewelry, I've got beautiful clothing, do you want this? Just come with me. And they kind of work on these children. And what happens is these children just disappear. So a lot of it goes on, you know, right here in the suburbs, you know. In malls and places like that, you know. In Nepal, the problem was economics. When I was doing this in 92, the average income of somebody living in the hinterlands of Nepal was $15 to $20 a year.
A year.
And they had 4 to 12 children. They might have had 6, 7 daughters. Every one of the daughters needed a dowry if they were to get married. If they didn't get married, they were a disgrace to their family. And when they did get married, they went to live with their in-laws and their husband. And they disappeared from the family's life almost forever.
Right.
And a trafficker would come and say, hey, I'll give you $200 in rupees, you know, for your daughter. You know, and the daughter was worth to them less than a water buffalo. And they would sell the children. And the trafficker would never tell them what the children were going to do. They would say, look, they're going to go to India, they're going to work as a nanny in a factory, they will send you money.
Right.
And what happened was, is the children would disappear and never be heard from again. So it was really a serious case of economics, of such extreme poverty.
Right.
That it forced people into this situation where they, you know, they would sell 4 or 5 children, they would have more money they could make in 5 lifetimes. You know, living where they were living. So
Right. It
was extraordinary.
So this isn't a simple problem of a perpetrator. This has roots in economics and lifestyle and many other aspects of our life.
The traffickers in this country touch upon the vanity of children. They try to find children that are, you know, have difficult home lives, that are rebellious against their parents. These children, they usually start about 12 years old. And by the time these kids are 20, they're kicked out of they just get rid of them. They're like used up tissues, you know? So this is what goes on. And they find these children and then they seduce them. They bring them into that life. And honestly, these children are then raped, they're tortured, they're drugged, and they're transformed into, you know, machines. And what happens is the trafficker becomes their family.
There's a loyalty.
There becomes a loyalty because they don't know anything else. And they're living in such fright that, you know, if you leave, if you go to the police, we will kill you, we will kill your parents, we will kill your siblings, we will do all this stuff. And the kids are like paralyzed. They don't know what to do.
Well, that's so true. I mean, in terms of their own life experience, when we come into this world, we tend to be very trusting and believe what is put in front of us. And whether that's somebody saying, oh, you're so pretty. Did anybody tell you how pretty you were? Oh, you're going to be a movie star. You're going to be a model. And then you sort of believe that because you wish that it were true. Or if they say, you know, if you don't come and do what we want you to do, we're going to hurt your family. It's believable.
It's very believable, and especially when you've been tortured and you've been, you know, literally.
And you see other kids that are being controlled.
Other kids are living the same. And the only family they have are those kids that are being controlled and the trafficker. And they can't escape, or they very difficult to escape. Some of them do, but it's very difficult to escape from that life.
Now, so far we've been talking about human trafficking, your experience in India.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any experience with this phenomenon in other parts of the world?
No, what I've been talking about is what's going on in this country.
Okay. And so you've been involved in that specific issue here in the U.S.?
I've been made very much aware about it because I've done many panel events with people that work in the field. You know, since I wrote this book, Little Sisters, I am inundated with panel events, you know, in many parts of the United States.
Well, you're an expert now.
Yeah, and yeah. I've learned from the FBI. I've done events with policemen. I have one coming up. I told you, with a congressman in Portland. We have somebody from the United States Congress who's going to be on a panel with myself and two other people.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds like good exposure.
Yes, and I have another one coming up in New York. There's going to be a state assemblywoman on the panel. So slowly it's been growing into, I think, the right areas of communication.
People are getting informed.
Because there's something that has to be done through legislation. See, I have a way of approaching this that's very interesting. There are two things in this thing. First, people have to be made aware that this is going on.
Right.
Secondly, we're talking about one of the most heinous crimes being committed in the 21st century. And legislation has to be passed that really punishes people severely for doing what they are doing.
Right.
So there is these two elements. The third element in this is an element of compassion. And let me explain what I mean here.
Please.
There are two elements in here. First of all, these children are not going to be extracted from that life unless people learn to love them unconditionally.
Well, yeah, because they feel so much shame and rejection. They feel broken.
That's right.
How can they just go home? They're completely
go home.
Different.
That's right. So they need to be loved unconditionally. There has to be compassion beyond all human compassion in order to really help these children. Now, there's another element to this, too, also. I spent many years of my life teaching meditation in prisons. I did this for 5 years in Texas. And there must have been 3,000 inmates in this prison. Well, I had about 20 students that were extracted from those inmates. And I learned through love, through compassion, through, you know, spiritual teaching, you can touch people very deeply. And even in places like prisons, they can be transformed into members of our society that are really highly functional. Now, for instance, I've been invited by a student of mine to teach in a place in Portland, Oregon, where we have a program going on in the Coffee Creek. And I go there every time I'm in Portland, which is at least every 3 months. And I go there at least once or twice. There are inmates there that have read my book, Little Sisters. And they come up to me and they say, when I get out of this place, I really want to help you.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's awesome. And they say to me, you know, and I understand that. They speak the language. They understand those kids.
Yeah.
Some of them have been through it themselves.
Sure.
And I say, what better people? And if you can extract them from those kind of situations by loving them, by teaching them something that can help them truly with their lives, it becomes a way of using compassion that really can do an incredible amount of good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the punishment, which is essential.
Well, there needs to be corrective action.
That's right.
Yeah, intervention and corrective action for sure.
And at the same time, it's almost like an oxymoron.
Oh, exactly.
You have to punish these people just to learn to love them. and learn to help them.
Well, the end goal is to have, like you described so beautifully, to have everyone contribute a very high purpose to our community,
to
our global community.
That's right.
Yeah. And I'm imagining that perhaps for them, it's a gift to have something of high value and purpose to contribute.
Yes, absolutely, Cynthia. They feel like their wife, which is concrete and bars, is now worth something.
Right.
They can be human beings living in this world and contributing something important to our society.
Yeah.
So it works on both ways. You understand? First, we got to put an end to this problem.
Absolutely.
Secondly, what do we do with these people once we have them locked up? Well, not all of them are going to respond to this, but one out of maybe 50, suddenly you can, they say in the Jewish religion, and I love it, if you save one life in your lifetime, the gateway to heaven opens up.
Mm.
And I really believe this, So like the motto of my foundation is, the visionary quest of the foundation is children, regardless of their race, when children, regardless of their race, religion, or ethnicity, are forced to become sex slaves, the entire world must take responsibility. And the Little Sisters Foundation will work tirelessly to save one precious child's life at a time.
And so, folks, if you want to know more about the Little Sisters Foundation or anything else that Stuart Perrin, our guest today at Simple Life Radio, has to offer, the website, stuartperrin.com, will have lots of information for you. Is there another website, Stuart?
Yes, there's the littlesistersfoundation.org.
Okay.
They can go to. And
wonderful.
There's video, there's all kinds of things about this on both those websites.
Now, I want our listeners to understand why, with such a passionate issue, why you would have been motivated and guided to format it in a novel form.
It was the only way I could do it.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you were, just for your own safety and perhaps political reasons, forming it that way. But I'm wondering if maybe because this is such a sobering topic.
It's a sobering topic, and I had to make it palatable.
Right.
So I wrote it as a love story, as an adventure story, as a family story. My training in writing is classical training. It comes from the ancient Greeks, from Shakespeare, from, that type of writing. And amazing to me, when this thing came out of me, it came out like a classical tragedy.
Yeah.
The most heinous person in the book becomes the tragic heroine.
Oh, wow.
And I wrote it so that it can be palatable to people. And there's a wonderful love story in the book between a man who is an extremely successful New York City lawyer, corporate lawyer, who comes from a fabulously wealthy family, who's married to a young woman who's about 25 years old, who is from Nepal, and he knows nothing about her past. And as the book unfolds, you are taken on a voyage through Nepal. It becomes also kind of a travel story.
Oh.
And you're taking it into the hinterlands, and you discover the life of this young girl, how she wound up getting married to this man. So I wanted the book to be something that can be a page-turner, that people will get involved in and read and understand that it's, yes, the underlying theme is human trafficking, but they can read a book that really has, a beautiful love story. There are four sisters involved. You understand? It's a suspense story because you really never know what's going to happen from moment to moment in this book.
Right.
It just keeps unfolding.
Well, it's also really educational because you've packed it full of actual information that you uncovered.
That's right. All about the Nepalese gods and goddesses. And I mean, the main character is the incarnation of a goddess, Saraswati, and she is the Hindu goddess of the arts, music and arts and stuff like that. And she is the incarnation. When she's born, the wise men in the village come and tell the parents that she is the one who has to dance in the temple because she is the incarnation of Saraswati. You know, and this man falls in love with her. The
sitar player?
Sitar. Saraswati plays the veena, which is the South Indian instrument, that the raga. And she learns how to play the veena. And when she's playing the veena in this house and this man meets her, he falls madly in love with her. She just captivates him so much that he cannot get her out of his system. And they wind up ultimately getting married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a very interesting story. It's culturally interesting. It's, you know, it really has this love story, this family story, this mother who's incredible in this book. You know, the mother of these girls is an incredible character. And this friend of mine, Dr. Ufretti, when she read the book, she said, "Stuart, I just had tears in my eyes." She
so
said,
great.
"I cried through it, the whole book."
That
you know?
Is so great. Well, you know, I had someone who read through your book and said, "This is really well written." So I'm so glad that you had all that training. And this is what, your seventh book?
Something like that.
Yeah. Now, Stuart's other books are very different. He is a spiritual teacher and a meditation teacher. You've heard him speak about. You'll find that on his website. But his style of writing really was well done in his book currently, the latest release, Little Sisters. And we will be having him at our bookstore. Now, I see from the clock that we do need to take another break here shortly. But I want to, I just want to mention that this topic, although it is very serious, is one that affects all of us. And I don't know the numbers in Monterey County, but I'm sure that we are somehow affected by it directly. I'm going to ask Hal if he knows the numbers, and if not, we should certainly have this broadcast from KRXA 540 AM. We are a local progressive talk radio station here in Sand City. And you can also hear us live stream on TuneIn or any other kind of live stream service, including the website radiomonterey.com. So we're going to go to break here shortly, and stay with us. When we get back, we'll talk more with Stuart Perrin here on Simple Life Radio. That's Casey Abrams singing Simple Life. Thank you, Casey. We're back from that break. Our guest today, Stuart Perrin, author of Little Sisters, who will be signing books at the local independent bookstore at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden, located in downtown Carmel on Dolores between 5th and 6th. If you want to give them a call, our number there is 831-624-4955. We're having a really great conversation about human trafficking, and our guest Stuart Perrin, who wrote about this in his book titled Little Sisters, has a personal experience with this issue, and also, as he mentioned earlier, has been invited to speak on panel discussion groups all through the U.S. and beyond. So, Stuart, I want to get right down to it. Okay, so we get ourselves sort of wrapped around this is an issue that isn't going away. The lives that are affected by it totally outweigh any war or all wars combined at this point. How do we keep our kids safe? I mean, what do you recommend to people? You've seen what happens with economics, with family cultures, with, like you said, going to the mall. What is it as parents, grandparents, or, you know, maybe we're caregivers? How do we keep our kids safe?
Well, the prime way is just education. Kids, we can't be shy about this. Young girls, 12, 14, 16 years old, that hang out in malls, have to be really advised by their parents not to talk with strangers, not to get in, you know, when people come on to them this way, to walk away, not to get involved. Look, I mean, I have an 18-year-old daughter, okay? And, you know, in any teenage kid, you're going to go through the ups and downs and throes of all kinds of problems.
Right.
You know, and I've talked to her about this. I let her read my book. I said, Ania, please read this book. She read, and after she finished, she said, Daddy, this really goes on in the world?
Yeah.
And I said, yes, Ania. She said, Daddy, what can I do to help?
Mm.
So children need to be educated. They're not stupid today. Kids are so sophisticated today.
Well, they have complete access to the internet.
Everything. And nobody should be afraid to sit down and have a long talk with their children about this problem.
Right.
Because if they don't, there's a possibility their child just might disappear.
Well, I think the other element that you touched on earlier was the look and the sound of a human trafficker. It's not a big bad man.
Okay? No,
it's a peer. It's a girl. You know, it's an attractive young girl.
That's right, and it's also a man who finds a child who he can become the substitute father for, or become the boyfriend of.
So really, an attractive man, charismatic,
that's right.
Very complimentary.
That's right.
So the issue is, how easily do we trust? Do we have any criteria for who we trust or how we put ourselves in someone's care?
Well, children need to be educated to check out who they're getting involved with, to look carefully, to understand what they're getting involved with, not to walk away with somebody, you know, I mean, to find out about them, to understand them, to see where they're coming from, what their history is.
Right.
Before they go out on dates with them, they get involved with them.
Right.
They have to be educated in how to do this. Because, you know, today, what goes on in the world is something, and, you know, the more you learn about it, the more you understand that we, as parents, are absolutely responsible to sit down and talk to our children about it.
Well, that's really true.
To take them on the internet and show them the statistics, the figures, let them know, not to make them paranoid.
Yeah, it's a fine line there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very fine line.
Yeah.
But to do it with love, with caring, with understanding, with trusting that our children are mature enough to understand all this, and that we're not just lecturing them on them on the right way to live, but really giving them an understanding of this problem going on in the world. It's a very important thing to do.
And I was wondering, preparing for this interview with you, Stuart, I was wondering how product advertisements and movies kind of play a part in this, because there's so much focus on sexuality, on a girl or a woman's value being related directly to her sexual attractiveness. And we're modeling to our young people, which are the future generation mothers and grandmothers and business owners. What are we doing? I mean, how much of a part does that play in setting their mindset?
Cynthia, I think, I hate to say this, but I think it's a very big part. It's a very, very big part. Children today are almost brainwashed into believing they have to look a certain way to live. You know, they have to be a certain way. They have to have a certain kind of beauty. They can never live up to the beauty of models they see in Vogue magazine. You know, they live with this kind of insecurity about themselves because they are constantly being blitzed by media with this kind of, you know, perfection, which really isn't perfection. But they have to be taught that if you want anything that even gets close to perfection, it comes from inside you. It doesn't come from the makeup you're wearing, the clothes you're wearing. If you want real beauty is not in Vogue magazine. Real beauty is in the human heart. And when people learn to keep their hearts open, they learn to love, they learn to have that security inside themselves, they become truly beautiful. And I've seen people transformed in front of my eyes who suddenly open their hearts. Now, if children can be taught that by their parents, you want to be beautiful? Learn how that beauty comes from inside yourself. It doesn't come because you're wearing a bikini.
Well, and it comes from parents actually treating their child that way.
Exactly.
From the parents recognizing the child's heart and cultivating that.
That's right.
And encouraging values that are able to empower the child so that, and I think, you know, I think you mentioned it before, if a girl is susceptible to somebody who's going to basically con them into thinking that they're going to have a better life than the life they always wanted, that comes from a place of that young girl being insecure to begin with.
It comes from a place of rebellion against their parents,
yeah.
Parents that don't take care of them, that don't love them, that treat them like, you know, dish rags, that, you know, the kids are a pain in the neck. They're not really children that are loved. And
parents are human, too. So a lot of parents make mistakes. I think the best intended parents.
I would say every parent makes mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it can look like they don't love their kids, or maybe they're being irresponsible,
right.
But it could still be out of just ignorance or some other injury of their own.
I agree.
Yeah.
What I learned early on, Cynthia, is that my mother and father weren't perfect.
No way.
I learned that when I was 18 years old.
Okay.
And I said to myself, Stuart, you know, look, they're not perfect. They're not going to treat you perfectly. You have to love them. No matter what you think they're doing to you, you are responsible. There are two people in the world that you got to love, your parents and your children. And if you aren't responsible to that kind of love, I promise you, all you do is get another incarnation in this life. You have to go through it again to where you learn how to love your parents and your children.
Wow. So if you're a community member and you are aware of human trafficking, you want to do something about it directly, let's say you are a volunteer in a local school and you see some funny business, what kinds of things are going to indicate that there is a susceptibility or something that's really not on the up and up?
Well, generally, you can tell it by the way the children are acting, you know, the way they are, how they are interacting with the people they interact with.
What might you see?
You know, can I answer? This is a very hard thing to do. This is a very, very difficult thing to do. I mean, nobody is going to be on watch 24 hours a day. And people that do this they go through the raindrops. They are very smart. The thing we can do is what we talked about before. Love our children. Respect our children. Listen to them. We have to learn to listen to them. This is the best prevention of anything like that happening. Getting where our children trust us implicitly. And there is a really loving, wonderful relationship with our children. And if parents learn how to do that, and if children learn how to do that, this problem will just cease to exist.
Well, I can't wait for that day. And certainly from the hands of empowered children and family members, you know, close-knit families, our strong families, our strong people. So I so appreciate you coming on to speak about this, Stuart. And as I mentioned to our listeners, Stuart Perrin will be at the Pilgrim's Way Bookstore in Secret Garden just after this interview, beginning at 5:30 today in Carmel. And he'll be there to speak to, ask questions of, and of course, sign books. His book titled Little Sisters will be for sale there. Just moving forward then, Stuart, I love to encourage and incite people to envision the world they want to live in. What vision do you hold for our future?
Listen, I'm not the prophet of Sai.
No, it's personal. It's not a prediction. It's personal, of course.
I can
it's
only
personal.
Tell you the vision I have for my own future.
Of course.
And my future is that I will take every day, every moment of my life, and try to use it in a conscious way to raise my capacity as a human being. And I you see, what I believe in is that we all are born here to become happy people. You know, I don't think there's any religion, any dogma that creates this. I think it's just all in the human heart. And happy people are enlightened people. People that truly learn how to... I once wrote in a book, the only successful people on the earth are happy people. You know, because that really allows us to reach the highest levels of our humanity. Now, this is perhaps the most difficult thing for people to attain on the earth.
Happiness.
And if they want to attain it, they have to learn how to get training, how to develop an inner life, to get strong enough to do it, to build the center, the balance inside themselves, how to keep their hearts open, how to keep this crazy mind quiet. And if people learn to do that, happy people don't, sell children. Happy people don't, rape and torture. Happy people are not pedophiles. Happy people don't live that way. And I feel that, this is probably, to my vision of life, one of the great answers in the world. Now, I'm talking about, a very difficult thing to do.
To be happy.
But I think everybody has inside themselves all the tools to do this. They all have chakra systems. They all have minds. They have breath. They have will. And what they have to do is to learn to use these tools to develop a system that can keep their hearts open. And once they can keep their hearts open, what comes out of them is forgiveness, it's love, it's compassion, it's happiness, it's joy, it's the recognition that everybody on this planet suffers, and we're here to embrace each other, to love each other, and to support each other as we take this journey through life.
That is fabulous. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Stuart. I really enjoyed this. I could go on for at least another hour, but I so appreciate the work that you're doing in the world and how much you have already collected and are willing to share.
Well, thank you for having me, Cynthia. It's just a pleasure to share this with you and your audience.
Very good. So I want to let you know before we run out of all of our time that Stuart will be at the bookstore to sign books right after this. If you want to give a call, the number there is 831-624-4955. And our guest next week here on Simple Life Radio will be local Doreen Smith, who is someone that I have a lot of respect for. She has made an incredible recovery from eating disorder. And she's a single mom, and she's a college student, and she's a fabulous, fabulous person. So join us again next week for Simple Life Radio here on 540 AM KRXA or live stream on RadioMonterey.com or tune in on your smartphone or tablet. And as always, want to make sure that you have a great week. Look forward to being with you again next week. Take good care. Zabadab, 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 zabad